I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, here we go. It is Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio. It is time for the Big E Sports Show, and I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Before we get underway, we'd love to hear from all of our listeners and many different ways to connect. You can join us, Twitter, at eRadio Sports, podcastarena.com, and you can always email the show, info@eradiosports.com. We've got lots to cover. We're going to do a full recap, Super Bowl 53, the NBA trade deadline. It is now in the rearview mirror. We will hit it hard on that. Also, we will take time for some PGA news and notes. But right now in studio, we're going to open up the mic because we're going to welcome back to the program my fabulous producer, Robert Harris. You can follow him at Twitter, at Robo Harris Jr. And Bobby, my boy, talk to me about Super Bowl 53 because, you know, what were your takeaways? We kind of thought, well, maybe there'll be a little bit of offense, but it was a low-scoring game.
Yeah, it was a very defensive type of game. You haven't seen one of those in ages, and a lot of people are saying the game was boring, but if you're a defensive guy, you're an NFL guy, I think you loved it. I mean, Tom Brady he's the GOAT. Six rings. I mean, there's nothing much more you can say about that.
He was able to take care of business, as you just mentioned. He picks up his sixth ring. Just incredible. But as we step back and we look at the Patriots season, how, you know, they were able to take care of business in the postseason. How challenging was this year for them?
It was very challenging because they had losses to Miami Dolphins, Detroit Lions, teams that they were supposed to annihilate and beat. But unfortunately, hey, it's Bill Belichick, it's Tom Brady, it's the two GOATs willing to get through the season. And they know when it's game time, when postseason comes around, and they took care of business.
The Patriots, just an incredible dynasty, and they pick up another Super Bowl in 53. Talk to me about your impressions of the Los Angeles Rams. What didn't they do?
I think they weren't ready. I think they weren't ready for the big spotlight, and we talked about that here on the show.
Yeah.
Seeing Jared Goff, how will he adapt to that spotlight, being in that moment? And he didn't shine. He looked like a little kid compared to Tom Brady. I mean, he made bad passes, bad timing on passes, missed routes here and there on the passes, overthrewing receivers. When he threw it off his back foot for the interception, that was pretty much to seal the game. So he just looked like a little kid in that situation.
Were you surprised to see the Rams offense struggle so much?
Yeah, I was surprised to see those guys struggle. Mm-hmm, they score a lot of points, so I was surprised to see that.
Okay, we're locked and loaded. An incredible 2 hours coming your way. SB Nation Radio. Much more coming your way right here at the fastest 2 hours in radio. That is the Big E Sports Show. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Alyssa Walker-Campbell with you. Many different ways to connect. Join us with Twitter at eRadio Sports, podcastarena.com, and info@eradiosports.com. Well, guess what? Earlier this week, it was National Signing Day, and my guy, we have welcomed him back. That is James Hale, 1400 KREF. You can listen to him online, 10 to 2, Total Sports, and he always has you covered. Good evening, James. It's been a very busy week for you. How are you doing?
Oh, it has been a busy week, and it really, really has. I'm doing great, and it's good to get this recruiting class, but with the new recruiting rules, it never stops. I think the coaches at the University of Oklahoma are taking a couple of days off after signing day, but they got to get back and grind. Heck, they have a junior day on February 23rd, I think it is, and then, of course, spring practice starts in early March, so it never stops. And with kids taking visits now in the spring cycle, and OU has that spring game coming up on April 13th, and they'll have maybe 20 kids in on official visits. Everything has changed on the recruiting clock, and so it never really slows down. The only time off about it, you know, maybe is August or something. I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's 365, no doubt about it.
Right.
Well,
right.
Let's talk about Oklahoma. Of course, this past season won their fourth consecutive Big 12 title, second straight Heisman winner. And the big-time transfer arrives in Norman, Oklahoma. How fired up are you about the arrival of Jalen Hurts?
Well, you know, it's one of those deals. Like, I'm a Red Sox fan, right?
Yeah.
So I don't like the Yankees, but I always respected Derek Jeter. And you had to respect the greatness of Jeter. And even though he seemed to come up every inning to hurt the Red Sox, you know, you had to respect what he does. Well, the same thing here. I mean, Oklahoma's main nemesis during this era. I mean, Oklahoma remains a blue blood, and they're playing up to that blue blood level because they are one of the top three or four programs in the country. But they haven't been able to get past Alabama. One of the reasons why is because of guys like Jalen Hurts. So when his situation with Tua, you know, kind of fell out, then, you know, it got to the situation, you know, then, and I knew Oklahoma's situation, you know, was left to a bunch of guys that haven't played very much. And then when Austin Kendall thought that Kyler Murray might come back, he kind of jumped into the transfer portal, and that kind of shocked OU a little bit. And so when that was developing, Lincoln knew he needed to get some kind of an experience into this quarterback room. If he had to go junior college, okay. But this came up with Jalen Hurts. The Hurts family reached out to OU, and that seemed like a perfect fit. When Jalen came down, OU didn't show him around the campus because he doesn't care about that. He knows OU's got facilities. He knows he can fit in anywhere. He wanted to talk offense. He wanted to talk quarterback room. He wanted to see what Tanner Mordecai looked like. He wanted to see what Spencer Rattler looked like. He wanted to find out from Lincoln Riley if Lincoln thought, with his own skill set, if he could work the offense around him. And when all that was satisfied, once Murray announced that he was going pro one way or the other, you know, Jalen jumped in. And Jalen, I think it's tremendous for OU. He has stepped right in. He hasn't tried to big time anybody. He's a natural leader, so that comes through. He's been great in the off season. He's great in the weight room. He's trying to pick up the offense. CeeDee Lamb has really become a partner of his and trying to help him out. Tanner Mordecai is trying to get him up to speed as well. Spencer Rattler has signed off on it, and Spencer will be there in June to join the competition, and he can't wait. And so it's all good so far, and this gives OU a winning quarterback, a guy that's been on the biggest stage. He's improved as a passer. He's actually going to be the best runner they've had. Kyler Murray was a great runner, but he was a reluctant runner. That's why he slid and some other things. Now, his speed and quickness is something we'll always remember about Kyler Murray at OU. But Jalen Hurts is like Thomas Lott. Think about Oklahoma's great wishbone quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
And I use Thomas as an example here. He was a great quarterback from 76 to 78 at OU on some of OU's most talented teams. The most talented team that probably didn't win a national title. That's who Jalen Hurts reminds me of. If Thomas was playing today, that's who he would be. When Jalen Hurts runs downfield, he's going to take on that linebacker. He's going to take on that safety. He's not going to slide. And so they'll add that running game principle, and I think it's going to be interesting to see. But it's been very positive so far. Jalen Hurts being at OU.
Hey, James Hale with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we talk about National Signing Day, but the fact the arrival of Jalen Hurts, and you're talking about now how he helped guide Alabama to two national championships, 26-2 as a starter. And
right.
I like how you're breaking down how he's already fitting into the culture at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Tell me about, what do you think, I mean, how hot will this offense be?
Well, they've got to replace four starters on the offensive line. That's always hard to do, except that you bet that Bill Beedenbaugh, their outstanding offensive line coach, can get that done. He's known this day was going to happen, that he was going to graduate four guys and two other guys would possibly go out early. And that's exactly what happened. So he's been planning for it. He's been recruiting to it. He's been bringing in four and five star offensive tackles and offensive guards now for the past two or three years. And he's brought in a junior college offensive lineman in Finley Felix. And I think Finley, you know, has a chance to start at either tackle or guard. We'll see. But it's going to be interesting. The competition's going to be intense. But their skill talent is really set. I mean, CeeDee Lamb's going to lead the wide receiver corps. OU just signed the best wide receiver class in the country. Charleston Rambo began to emerge last year, and Grant Calcaterra now will be back for his third year of major playing time at that big slot receiver. And Lee Morris is back, who's been a playmaker at the inside slot receiver as well. Then the running back, the group just got better with the recruiting class, and so all the runners return. So they're loaded on offense, and it's going to be a loaded offense this year. If Jalen can figure it out, which he will, he's a very smart player. So I don't worry about him really figuring things out. But in this offense, how good and how high-flying it's going to be is if he's precise on those wheel routes, those quick slant routes. You know, you got to hit those wide receivers just in the right spot so you can utilize their speed and they can don't have to stop to catch the ball. The same thing for running backs coming out of the backfield. Those slip screens, those bubble screens, they have to be thrown with tremendous velocity on target. And that's been Jalen's weakness a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but he's working with the quarterback guru, the quarterback whisperer, the quarterback savant, and Lincoln Riley. And if Lincoln can't get him up to speed, then nobody can. And what Jalen Hurts is banking on, and this he's banking on this because he's already a fourth or fifth round draft choice in the NFL. He's banking on working with Lincoln to get into that number one or two round slot. And don't bet against him. He's dedicated, and Lincoln is really good at developing quarterbacks.
Okay, host of Total Sports, James Hale with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Also, check him out, Die Hard Sooner Report, Patreon U. And, James, you know, it's interesting, so much talk about this high-profile player in Jalen Hurts. What can you share about Oklahoma's quarterback backup situation, this Spencer Rattler out of Arizona? Understand he was a five-star player.
He was a five-star, and Tanner Mordecai was a four-star coming out of Texas a couple of years ago. And you got a feel for Tanner because, you know, and Austin Kendall, too, who transferred out and is going to West Virginia. Both those guys thought they would be competing against each other for the starting quarterback job, and then Spencer would come in and you'd have to start the competition all over again. Now the way this has come down, you know, now you've got one guy that's transferred, and Tanner Mordecai wants to compete for the job. He's been told he'll be given every chance, and right now he's getting equal reps with Jalen Hurts. You know, in spring, that's pretty good. You know, they have two quarterbacks. They'll split the first team reps. They'll get all the reps on campus because, you know, the other quarterbacks are walk-ons. And they like Tanner Schaefer pretty well, but he's never been put on scholarship and he hasn't played yet. Then you have Spencer rolling in June. So great opportunity for Tanner Mordecai, who can really throw it. I really don't think Hurts throws the ball better than Mordecai. Mordecai's got a great arm. I've been told by both Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield mm-hmm. that the guy that threw the best in their room was Tanner Mordecai. Now, Tanner hasn't played. He's played, you know, he's had a couple of series. He's still redshirted this past year. He took advantage of that new rule. But he can really throw it. And Jalen's not going to throw the ball better than him. And I don't think he'll throw the ball better than Spencer Rattler. So the young guys will actually, you know, fly it around a little bit better than Jalen Hurts. But it's that leadership, it's that experience, that ability to run, all the things that, you know, Lincoln can do with a solid running quarterback and things like that, that's going to make Jalen a really good quarterback. But the backups, they have the coaching staff excited. They feel like they're good at quarterback over the next few years.
A lot of folks are excited about the changes that have taken place defensively as we talk about Oklahoma. We are flat out of time. James Hale has been with us. Check him out, Die Hard Sooner Reports, Patreon U, 1400 KREF in Norman, Oklahoma. Total Sports, 10 to 2. He is simply the best. Thank you, Jay. I will talk to you real soon, my friend.
Okay, E, have a great day. Thank you very much.
Of course. Much more coming your way here in Hour 1, SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Hour 1, welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect with us. You can join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports, podcastarena.com, and you can always email the show at info@eradiosports.com. Always got to take time to pause, recognize the folks that power all of us here at SB Nation. They make it happen, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think of them for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and known for their guaranteed everyday low price. O'Reilly's, better parts, better pricing every day. Well, we are so excited. We're going to continue the full recap of Super Bowl 53. It was hardly a thriller. It was a defensive matchup, but it turned out okay if you're a Patriots fan. And we are delighted to welcome back to the program to get his takeaways, and that is Bob Glauber, NFL columnist for New York Newsday. Good to have you back. He's also the president of the Pro Football Writers of America. Hello, Bob.
How are you, Alyssa? I'm doing great, and thanks for having me. It was, you know, I actually thought it was a pretty compelling game. I know not a lot of points, but, man, I'm kind of used to that old-school football, defensive football, and it was pretty good.
You're an old-school kind of guy, but I think for all of us contemporary folks, I mean, we kind of like those offensive juggernauts type of games. So talk to me about Why did the Rams' offense struggle? I mean, what do you think was the biggest reason?
Yeah, just for the record, I do like offensive football. There's no, no doubt about that.
Come on, Bobby.
Having, you know, there is a beauty to defensive football, and that was probably, somebody put it as, that might have been Bill Belichick's Mona Lisa. And I found that a very compelling description of what he and Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator, who's now the Dolphins head coach, what they did to the Rams' offense was really staggering. And I don't think anyone could have expected that. It was, you know, the Rams should have done a lot better. And Sean McVay, I think to his dying day, will look back on that day with a lot of regret because of the adjustments that he didn't make against Bill Belichick's defense, which was absolutely brilliantly conceived.
Well, and I was going to say, should we question Sean McVay's play calling? I mean, what didn't he do?
Well, I just don't think he changed with what Belichick was doing. I think Belichick reacted to what McVay had been doing, and what he had been doing a lot of was the play-action passing for Jared Goff. And Goff was so used to dropping back, either handing the ball off to Todd Gurley or C.J. Anderson, and if he didn't hand off, you know, you get the play fake and things open up. You turn your back to the offense, you drop back, you set your feet, you look, and something was always open. But against the Patriots, nothing was open. And I think McVay just didn't have the kind of, and I don't know if he was overwhelmed by the moment or what, but he didn't really change his tactics based on what Belichick was doing. He stuck with, he was like, okay, this is what got us here. We're going to keep doing this. I don't care. And I think he needed to care, and he was beating himself up after the game and will continue to beat himself up. Those losses to, you know, from coaches, uh-huh, they last a lifetime. And I know that from having talked to a number of coaches over the years, and, you know, you go back to a painful loss for any coach, and they'll go back and relive it with such vivid detail, you know, you're staggered by it. But this one's going to hurt McVay for a long time. I think his best, you know, result from it is that, you know, he kind of looks, does some soul searching, which I'm sure he's doing, and comes out of it a better coach. And there's every reason to believe that he will.
Bob Glauber, NFL columnist for New York Newsday, joining us tonight, SB Nation Radio. Give him a follow at Twitter, at Bob Glauber. Of course, you had just written a book and released it this fall on three Hall of Fame coaches. It is titled Guts and Genius, the story of three unlikely coaches who came to dominate the NFL in the 80s. And so we're talking about, you know, Sean McVay's, what he should have done, shoulda, coulda, woulda. Let's talk about and celebrate Bill Belichick as a head coach and what he has been able to accomplish this dynasty. And, you know, we consider him, what, the greatest of all time?
Yeah, I think he is the greatest of all time. And, you know, you mentioned that the book, and it was about Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells, and Joe Gibbs,
yeah,
obviously three Hall of Fame coaches. And this game was kind of an extension of two of those coaches, and Belichick is a Parcells disciple, and Sean McVay is on the Walsh coaching tree. And I found that matchup kind of through that lens really interesting. And I think you do put Belichick as the greatest coach of all time. I don't know how you don't. His accomplishments are legendary. I got a chance to get to know Bill Belichick when he was not Bill Belichick, and you know, the Bill Belichick we've come to know now. And I really feel fortunate to have kind of watched him as a no-name defensive assistant for the Giants. We knew, the writers knew back then, and this is the mid-80s to late 80s, we knew that he was a huge factor in what Bill Parcells was able to do. And Parcells, obviously the dominant voice on that team and the dominant figure. But Belichick had kind of like that it factor as far as, you know, X's and O's. Now, nobody could have forecast that he would grow to be this amazing coach with six Super Bowls, with just a litany of unbelievable game plans. But in his head, that really created it, and he was able to kind of persevere and hang around. I marvel at his longevity. I talked to him once in a while, the other day, mm-hmm, not long ago. I said, hey, who's going to last to him, Bill? You know, who's going to be around longer, you or me? He goes, I don't know, probably you.
So, I love it.
And then, you know, the matchup, he just did so many things so well with a team that was limited. I mean, they had limitations. That was a bit of a surprising regular season in this respect. We've come to expect these wobbles from the Patriots in the first month of the season. And I go back to, you know, the last preseason game that Belichick had against the Giants last year. He talked about the first month of the season. He specifically mentioned it. And I found it interesting that he did that because he's right. You know, there have been these 2-2 starts. And what they do is they just try to figure out what other teams are doing, and it takes a while to get what other teams' tendencies are on tape. And but Belichick invariably figures it out. But there is that kind of learning curve. What was different about this year was that they didn't really go on that uninterrupted run after that first month. They had wobbles later in the season, and Brady was not himself. There was an 8-game span where he had 9 touchdown passes. That is just not Tom Brady production. But the beauty of Belichick was he was able to kind of coach through it, coach around it, and once they kind of got their sea legs late in the season, they had 2 wins over the Jets and Bills late, and they go into the playoffs, they just took off from there. And you know, you could just see them peaking, and they carried it through into the playoffs. Great game plan against San Diego, which was wrong for using 7 defensive backs the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
Great performance against the Chiefs, and then an equally great performance against the Rams offense.
Hey, Bob Glauber with us just a few more minutes tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Check him out online. NFL columnist for the New York Newsday. We are talking about Bill Belichick just celebrating the incredible dynasty with the Patriots, wondering, will this ever be replicated? And as we talk about Coach Belichick, I mean, we both agree that he's the best coach in the history of the game, but is there a common thread? I mean, you were just name-dropping, talking about your book that you released this fall, Guts and Genius, but with Bill Walsh, Joe Gibbs, and Bill Parcells, is there a common denominator between Bill Belichick and those 3 Hall of Famers?
I think he's obviously, exceeded the accomplishments of those 3, but I would say, there is. And there's kind of an old school mentality to Bill Belichick. He's able to keep up with obviously trends, but, there are tenets of his belief that mm-hmm. he always sticks to, and that is be disciplined. Never deviate from your plan in terms of your preparation, and it's just all business all the time. Players sometimes chafe, and a lot of players in the 80s, maybe Gibbs was a nicer coach, they didn't really chafe under him, but Walsh and Parcells, they were tough, exacting coaches, and the players kind of didn't like it at times, and you'll see that with some Patriots. But man, when they celebrate that Lombardi trophy at the end, they realize that, okay, this is why we have to grind, and this is why Belichick makes us do it. And Belichick's the greatest that there ever was in terms of grinding, and I'm amazed that he just overcomes salary cap, he overcomes personnel situations. Obviously, he's got Brady, and that's huge. You can't underestimate that. But he also overcomes the burnout factor that has claimed so many coaches over the years. He just has this flatline personality that allows him to just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. I don't know when it's going to stop.
Bob, who has been the most important when you think about just the success that the Patriots have had? Does it start just at the top with head coach, or is it Tom Brady? I mean, who gets the most credit?
Well, there's this argument. Well, who is the most important guy? Is it Brady? Is it Belichick? I would say Belichick, because, you can have great talent and you can have great players, but if you don't have great coaching, it's not going to work. We've seen talented quarterbacks along the way not win championships because they can't overcome inadequate coaching. So I would probably put Belichick a hair above Brady, but I don't think Belichick has this kind of success, without a guy like Brady, because he's been so reliable, so consistent, and so elite for so many years. Did he slip a little bit this year? Yes, but obviously still good enough to win championships with, and it looks like as long as he wants to play, they will be a contending team.
And the Patriots, are they your favorite next year to win the Super Bowl as we look ahead?
I'm going to take a step out and take the Chiefs this time.
Okay, nice.
I'll tell you, at some point
that.
It's going to have to change. And the Chiefs, they hung 31 points on the Patriots and nearly beat them.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, the second best offensive football puts up 3 because of Bill Belichick's brilliance. So I think if one team is going to unseat them, it would be the Chiefs. Having had that experience going in here, maybe taking that next step, and I look to them as the potential AFC team coming out.
Okay, we're running out of time. Only have time for one more question. Bob Glauber, NFL columnist for New York Newsday. Quickly, give us a hit on Guts and Glory, the story of 3 unlikely coaches who came to dominate the NFL in the 80s. I mean, these are 3 men who changed the course of professional football. They were amazing.
They really did. Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells, and Joe Gibbs, I think collectively combined, for one of the greatest years of coaching. I got a chance to see Gibbs at the Super Bowl. I was thrilled to just, get a picture of him with the book, and he seemed to enjoy it. And that was living legacies on those guys. And, Walsh obviously not with us. But I think they created great football, and they left behind a legacy that now leaves us with coaches like Bill Belichick and Sean McVay.
Good stuff. NFL columnist, New York Newsday, Guts and Genius. Pick up a copy of Bob Glauber's latest release. Thank you so much. We appreciate it, Bob.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate talking to you.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. And before we get underway with our next guest, many different ways to connect with us. You can listen to all of our broadcasts at podcastarena.com, if perhaps you've missed one of our interviews this evening. Also, we love to hear from all you Twitter enthusiasts. Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And always got to take time to recognize and thank the folks that power all of us at SB Nation. And that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. You got to think of them for all your car care needs, as they are close, convenient, and they're known for their everyday low, low price. O'Reilly's, better parts, better pricing every day. Well, we're going to take time for just a little mini recap of Super Bowl 53. Of course, the Los Angeles Rams unable to take care of business, and the Patriots prevail in a not-so-sexy Super Bowl, 13-3. Wide receiver Julian Edelman, Super Bowl 53 MVP, and we are delighted now to open up our phone line and open up the mic and welcome back the Big E MVP each and every week as we go inside the ropes with the great Larry Miller. And if you're just tuning in, check out his website right now, LarryMillerGolf.com. Good evening, Larry.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, and we're just about over the heartbreak of the NFC Championship game.
Oh,
we got closure. We have closure now that the Super Bowl's over.
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, we had you on the show tonight. Let's just kind of pause and reflect on how that Super Bowl played out. I mean, do you think the Patriots were impressive, or were the Los Angeles Rams, were they just that disappointing?
Well, we call it karma here in New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
Karma caught up with the Rams. But I think that the MVP of that Super Bowl was the Patriot defense.
Okay, yeah.
They were just awesome and, you know, held the Rams to what, you know, I mean, you know, 13-3 points is unbelievable for that offense. So the Patriot defense just did an outstanding job, just incredible job. But I can tell you this, 13 would not have gotten it against the Saints, that's for sure.
You know, and I was going to say, I mean, you are there in Louisiana, so what's kind of been the reaction? I mean, you're on the golf course, you know, you guys are talking about the game. What was the reaction from so many of those Saints fans?
Well, most of the city didn't watch it. We had what they call a boycott bowl
down
in the warehouse district, and there were literally more people at the boycott bowl down in the warehouse district than was in the Metrodome in Atlanta. We had more people, and, you know, the ratings, I'll bet you that one out of five people in New Orleans did not watch the game. It was just a total city, boycott. We called it the boycott bowl. And, because we got robbed in the NFC game. And so it just took the heart out of the joy of watching football at all, much less, you know, the Rams, who shouldn't have been there. It sounds like sour grapes, but anybody who saw the game and saw the replays, they know that we were absolutely robbed. For what reason? We don't know. We may never know, but that's the way it played out. But anyway, here's another little sidelight.
Okay,
final
tell
score,
me.
13-3,
mm-hmm.
Patriots over the Rams, but the Saints' record was 13-3 this year. So
A
little voodoo
okay.
from New Orleans.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, you're listening tonight, Larry Miller, former PGA pro, as we go inside the ropes each and every week. Larry is also a prolific author. His latest release, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. He's got another release coming up in 2019. We're super excited about that. But right now, Larry, let's go ahead and move ahead. Let's talk about the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Ricky Fowler took care of business, and muscled through a very difficult triple bogey on number 11. I mean, it was dramatic to say the least, but he was able to, grit and grind it out.
Yeah, well, I call that tournament the circus, you know, for the atmosphere. But I'll tell
for
you,
sure.
I think it's just what Ricky Fowler mm-hmm. needed. You know, he's had so many times where he was in contention or at the lead or near the lead and then couldn't close it out on the last day. And cost him a bunch of golf tournaments. This time, he tried to give it away again, but he found the resolve and he dug deep, hung on, and closed it out this time. And I think that's just what he needed, was to close one out when he was beginning to falter, because now it's going to take the pressure off. He knows he can do it, and I think he's going to start being able to close out tournaments a lot better now and win a lot more. So I was glad to see it. Expect a big year out of him, especially after that. And, boy, what resilience to – at one point he was five over for the round.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like the wheels completely came off, but he was able to get it back. And it reminds me of a little guy called Eli Walker Campbell, who made a 10 on a hole in a junior tournament.
That's right.
And then made seven straight pars. So yeah. That same resolve is what you need to learn how to do in order to close out tournaments.
And I might add, too, Larry, he shot a 78. With a 10.
With a 10.
Yeah.
With a 10. So that shows a lot of the same resilience and perseverance that Ricky showed on Sunday.
You know, I have to wonder, too, when Ricky got back to his hotel or when, you know, he got back home, you always reflect on that round, that tournament. What do you think he learned about himself as we talk about, you know, he demonstrated tremendous poise?
Well, I think he learned that, number one, you know, that he's not a choker, that he is able to close out a golf tournament. And that's why I say I think it's just what he needed was to have that happen the way it did, because now he knows that he can do it. You know, Tom Watson early in his career went through the same scenario. Tom had a lot of tournaments early on that he faded at the end and gave the tournaments away. Once at the Western Open dramatically, where he double bogeyed the last hole to lose by one. And so it happens. But once you overcome that hurdle and close one out that way, it really, really adds to your courage and your nerve. And so, anyway, yeah, I think Ricky took great satisfaction in the fact that he was able to do that.
It was incredible. Ricky Fowler, he wins the Waste Management Open with a triple and a double in that final round. So perhaps the narrative does change on Fowler. You know, now he is a closer. In your mind, you were talking about, you know, perhaps, you know, this is a glimpse of what is to be in 2019, Larry. I mean, do you think he can win a major championship?
Oh, absolutely. He's got all the necessary tools. He's a great ball striker. He hits it long enough, which in majors holds, particularly the U.S. Open and the Masters, you've got to hit it long, especially in those two, to even contend. But he's certainly long enough, a great iron player and a fantastic putter. When he gets that putter going,
oh yeah,
you know, look the first 3 days what he was doing, 20 under after the first 3 days. You know, he was just lighting it up with his putter, and he can get that way. So he's got all the tools, and now he knows he can close it out. So, yeah, I think this might be the year where he finally wins a major. I think his best chance could be either the Masters or perhaps the PGA, you know, in those two venues particularly. But I'd love to see him break through, and that would leave Matt Kuchar then as the next best player not to win a major.
Well, perhaps we will see Ricky Fowler in the winner's circle more often. I wanted to pause and reflect on number 11, when he got the triple. Did you agree with the ruling when that batter, the ball rolled into the water after his drop?
Yeah, I mean, the officials on the PGA Tour, especially now with the technology and the TV replays and everything else, they get it right.
Okay.
And, you know, you're not going to see any bad. You know, years ago you'd see some bad rulings because you just weren't really sure what happened. But I think nowadays I think the rulings are spot on. If, you know, they ultimately get to the bottom of it. So yeah, I think so.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker Campbell. We are visiting with our familiar guest who joins us each and every week, and that is Larry Miller, former PGA Pro, Inside the Ropes. Check him out, LarryMillerGolf.com. And, you know, Ricky Fowler, we've been talking about it. He certainly has had his share of heartbreak at this particular tournament. But I'd like for you to share with our listeners tonight, talk about the characteristics of a tour player or a professional golfer. You know, what does it take to move on quickly after you blow up on a hole and, you know, you have to muscle through some adversity?
Well, you have to realize that a round of golf, whatever score you shoot at the end of that round, is just a combination of numbers. You know, if you make a double on a par four, it's a six. If you make a triple on a par five, it's an eight. But it's a number. And at the end of the round, you add up all the numbers, and that's your score.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to treat each shot as if it's an integral part of that eventual number, that total number of strokes. And so each shot is worth as much as any other shot. a one-inch tap-in putt is worth exactly the same as a 320-yard drive. One shot, one stroke. So attention and care and focus has to be given to each one of the shots, whether it's a one-inch putt or 320-yard drive. And that's how you're able to overcome. You don't look at it as, gee, I just double bogeyed or triple bogeyed a hole. You look at it as, I made eight strokes on that hole, and now I've got another hole to play, and let's see what number I can put up here and do my best on every swing.
And it's very important that after a bad shot, one thing we've learned when you're on the show each week is you don't want to get too quick and try, you know, get over technical and overthink that next shot. I mean, you've just got to trust your routine and ultimately hope that it plays out to your advantage.
Yeah, you have to trust your process. That's
exactly right.
And I think the details of the process are what's important to key on, because they can't vary. When you start varying the details of your routine or your process, then you change things. And you get out of rhythm and out of tempo, and bad things happen. Hit bad shots, make bad decisions too. So you have to stay immersed. I call it being immersed in the details of your routine.
Right.
And I use the example all the time. Scott McCarron told me once that he even tugs at his glove the exact number of times when he's getting ready during his pre-shot routine.
Okay.
Every little movement, every little detail is the same every time. That's what keeps you in the present moment. And that's what keeps you from wandering off into negative territory.
Is the Waste Management Phoenix Open Tournament, is this good for golf? What do you think, Larry? There's a lot of drug fans, and it's very chaotic. Is this a good thing?
You know, being only once a year, yes. If it was a consistent thing, I'd be a big no on it and really thumbs down, because it's really not in the spirit of the sportsmanship of the game and all that and the tradition. But once a year, it's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I call it the circus. And I think the players love it, because it's something out of the ordinary, and it breaks the monotony of the same old every week. And, yeah, I think it's great for the game, as long as, you know, every tournament doesn't start having this circus atmosphere. You know, I like it once a year, yes.
Well, and I have to wonder, too, though, Larry, on the other end of this, you know, perhaps argument is, there's always, and we talk about this all the time, there's so much emphasis about growing the game. What kind of message does that send, though, to these young junior golfers or those little eyes that are watching, you know, a tournament like this, and it looks like a frat party and a bunch of kegs?
Well, as long as the television doesn't put too much focus and emphasis
okay.
on the
right.
on the drunks in the stands, you know, and you know, I mean, some people do get out of hand and,
sure.
and inappropriate behavior, but the stadium hole, the par three, you know, and the players giving mm-hmm. gloves and balls and whatever to the fans and high fiving them, and you know, they cheer good shots and boo bad ones, but the boo is done in good humor,
mm-hmm.
and the pros even laugh about it. But yeah, you know, I wouldn't want my grandson, who's six and a young golfer,
yeah.
I wouldn't want him being focused on drunks in the stands falling over each other, slobbering around. That would not be a good image for him to have about golf.
Absolutely, for sure. Okay, so talking about bad boy behavior, Sergio Garcia, we need to go sit him in timeout. I mean, like, what was he thinking in Saudi Arabia? And, you know, DQ'd for his temper, and I just, you know, cringed watching that video of him in the bunker. So, I mean, we've all had that kind of frustration on the course, but you're a pro. I mean, you've got to act like one.
Well, I'll tell you, through the years, you know, when I was playing on the tour, I saw firsthand, I saw Jack Nicklaus, I saw Arnold Palmer, I mm-hmm. saw Gary Player display anger, but nothing of that magnitude.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the worst I've ever seen on a guy. Even Tommy Bolt, my mentor, you know,
yep.
who was famous for his temper or infamous, I mean, uh-huh. he didn't do anything like that. The worst he ever did was helicopter a club down the fairway. You know, in fact, he said, always throw it forward so you don't have to walk back to get it. But, yeah. But that was just off the charts. You know, he went berserk, and I don't know. You know, there's probably something at the root of that
yeah.
that really manifested in that outburst and that fit that he threw, because that was out of the ordinary, and I've never seen a top player in the world do anything like that. So I wonder what was bugging him. It couldn't have just been the bunker shot. It wasn't that bad. He got it on the green, maybe 15 feet from the hole. It wasn't like he chunked it in the sand or, you know, or laid it over the green. So something was bugging him. Maybe he wanted to go home. You know, who knows?
I don't know.
But that was a ridiculous outburst, and certainly nothing for a young player to emulate and applaud.
We are Inside the Ropes with Larry Miller, former PGA pro. We will be right back after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour number one, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin former PGA pro Larry Miller as we are inside the ropes. It was certainly bizarre, but also, you know, just damaging the greens purposely.
Yeah.
And that's holy. That's sacred, you know, the green. We know that.
Yeah, slashing around the bunker is one thing. You can rake it. But when you damage a green, now you're bringing into play, now you're hurting your fellow competitors who may have to putt over a damaged spot. But although now the new rule is you can repair any damage on the putting green, but if you do it bad enough, you can't repair it that quickly. And so it could hurt another player, potentially, theoretically. And so that's not good. You know, the bunker thing was bad enough, but damaging the green was, I think that was the last straw, and that's why he got DQ'd.
I only have time for one more question, Larry. I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you ever get frustrated like that as a pro? I mean, you ever have an outburst like that? Come on.
Well, no, not like that. The worst I've ever done is slam a club into the ground.
Uh-huh.
Pretty hard.
Right.
But that's about it. I learned early on, my teacher told me that when I hit a bad shot,
uh-huh,
he said, this is a rule, a cardinal rule. He says, within 5 seconds, you've got to start planning how you're going to hit a great shot on the next one. And that takes you right out of that anger and negative territory. For a few seconds, you can steam, but boy, it's got to burn off right away, and you got to get to the next shot.
He is simply the best. Larry Miller, former PGA pro, inside the ropes. Check him out, LarryMillerGolf.com. All of his books are posted on there if you want to sign up for some lessons online. And Larry, always a true pleasure. Enjoy the weekend. And you know what? Spring's just around the corner. Things are starting to bloom here in Houston. We're pretty fired up.
Yes, yeah, the green grass is coming in Pebble Beach this weekend.
That's
so
right.
Let's enjoy that. Enjoy the beautiful scenery if it doesn't